So I'm just saying good Sunday morning to everyone. I'm Bobby Hartman, and I'm welcoming you to the Peace and Justice Summer Series, Welcoming the Stranger, and our title is A Look at Immigration in the United States. There are three of these. Today we're going to learn about the history of immigration, how we got to where we are. Next week, we'll learn about the current state of affairs, and then the following week, the 26th, we'll learn about some of the work being done to help out with people who are undergoing immigration and how we can participate. There's lots of details if you go to the Westminster Weekly and then you click on the Read More, it'll give you all kinds of background. So you know what to expect. Our speaker is Christian Mignor. He's going to give us about a 30-minute lesson on the history of immigration, and there should be about 15 minutes left for questions. We have had some little discussion here about how to do that. We have the chat box in the upper right hand corner of your screen. You can type your question there. You can also raise your hand digitally, and if that doesn't work, you can, I guess, yell, hey, you, but I'm not sure how that'll work. Anyway, we don't want to leave anyone's questions unanswered. Before we begin, I'd like to open with prayer. So pray with me, please. God of us all, red and yellow, black and white, we are precious in your sight. Thank you for sending Christian to us this morning. Open our hearts and minds to the needs of others. Things are uncertain for all of us now, but we pray especially for those whose home and even homeland is so uncertain. Teach us and give us work to do in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
So I would like at this point to introduce our speaker, Christian Mignor. And I'll try to get the pronunciations correct. He is an attorney in Pittsburgh. He graduated with a law degree from Benemérita Universidad Autónoma de Puebla, Mexico. For a German, that's not too bad. after a few years of working in public service, Christian relocated to Pittsburgh. He was accepted into the Masters of Law program at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law, where he completed a Juris Doctorate degree, the JD degree. While he was in law school, he was a student attorney with the Immigration Law Clinic at the University of Pittsburgh Law School, and his strong commitment with his community is developed through the pro bono work he's done to underserved communities, particularly the Hispanic community in Pittsburgh. So, incorporating his experience as an attorney with immigration cases, Christian would like to provide us with a historic framework of the immigration in the United States. So take it away, Christian.
Hi, thank you so much, Bobby. Well, first of all, I would like to thank you for this invitation that I have to speak today. One of my strong commitments to my community is to provide this type of conversations with the community, and try to talk about my experience, my personal experience. I'm an immigrant myself. As Bobby mentioned, I came here from Mexico. I relocated almost now 10 years ago. Actually 12 years ago. I relocated from Mexico. I've been here now in the United States, in Pittsburgh. I am very blessed that I am here, surrounded by a great community. So, thank you, and thank you for your interest in these topics. Thank you for spending your Sundays this way, trying to learn and understand what's going on, related to these important topics such as immigration. It affects, so many lives. It affects not just, it's not an issue or, a circumstance. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So, thank you for doing that, and thank you for your time today. So I'm going to share my screen right now. And I'm going to share my presentation with you, my PowerPoint presentation. As Bobby mentioned, if you want to use the chat box to, you know, ask questions as we go or wait at the end, that's fine. Whatever you want is fine with me, or, you know, just speak up. So I'm going to share my screen right now.
Oh.
Can you see my screen?
No.
Damn it.
No, we're going to see your screen.
There we go.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Okay. Perfect. So we are going to talk about the history of immigration, and this is going to, you know, in 30 minutes is going to be very difficult to provide you all the details and the facts about, you know, what happened in the history of the United States about immigration. So before I do that, before I jump into the history of immigration, I would like to talk about key findings about U.S. immigration. So what's going on in the United States and why we believe that immigration is important. So according to the Pew Research Center, the United States has more immigrants than any other country in the world. So that's, you know, we receive more immigrants every year, you know, through lawful and unlawful means than any other country in the world. Even though that immigration is a common pattern of behavior worldwide, the U.S. immigration is one of the most important recipients of immigrants in the world. According to the statistics, there are about 43 million foreign-born individuals in the United States. 76% of these individuals are in the country legally, so meaning they enter through lawful means. And 24 of these immigrants are unauthorized immigrants, either because they enter into the country through lawful means and then their visas expire or something happened and they lost you know, the permission to be lawfully here in the United States, or they enter the country without a permission or, you know, a visa, a document, a passport. So that means that they probably enter through like what the law considers unlawful means. Of these 24% of unauthorized immigrants, so this accounts to over 10 million of individuals. So can you imagine 10 million of individuals in a country of 300 million? It's quite a large number. From these foreign-born individuals in the United States, Mexicans are a majority of the unauthorized immigrants. So apparently 52% in 2012. And, you know, through the most recent immigration policy, this number has declined. But again, Mexico is the top origin country of the U.S. immigration population. Other larger origin groups are immigrants from China, from India, from Philippines, and El Salvador. However, even though that, you know, the largest number of immigrants are, you know, from Latin American countries, by race and ethnicity, there are more Asian immigrants than Hispanic immigrants since 2010. So now we have seen a shift in the immigration patterns. So before 2010, we used to see that most of the immigrants will come from Latin American countries. Now we are seeing that, you know, this has shifted to, you know, more immigration from Asian countries. Why also is, you know, talking about immigration is very important? Because immigrants and their descendants are projected to account for 88% of the U.S. population growth through 2065. And that is an issue about, you know, social issues, you know, include, like, immigrants tend to be to some point less educated. Immigrants tend to have more children. So that's why you can see that, you know, this is going to, the projections are to account for almost 88%, which is a huge number. So Now we are going to jump to the history of immigration in the United States. So the federal power of immigration, since the Constitution was enacted in the United States, this was considered to be an inherent power, that the federal government had an inherent power to regulate immigration. Even though that the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution doesn't mention the power of the federal government to regulate immigration, the courts have granted the power, you know, this federal power to the federal government. The immigration laws in the United States since the earlier times have reflected the politics and migrant flows of the times. So that means, you know, that we will see immigration through economic policy. The economic policy dictates immigration. Whatever happens in the country related to politics and related to the economy will dictate how immigration is going to be shaped and the policy for immigration. So before 1790, there was no immigration law. There was no enacted regulations related to immigration. So as you know, this country was a new country, the country of opportunities. Most of the migration will come from Western Europe, mostly from Great Britain. So just people will arrive and settle here in the United States. So in 1790, Congress enacted the Naturalization Act. And this was the first law that related to immigration law and immigration policy. According to this Naturalization Act of 1790, it was very simple. So they only will require to give citizen to an individual who had at least 2 years of residence in the country, good moral character, and good moral character is very important over the years because that's something that has shaped this country about. We want people here to come to this country who has good moral character. And good moral character is of people who have, who are not, you know, in the past, like no prostitutes, no alcoholics, no people who, you know, convicted of any crimes. So they wanted to people who had moral, good moral character. And back in the day, 1790, also the applicant had to be a free white person. Later, this Naturalization Act was extended to 14 years, to the 14 years of residency. So then what happened, 100 years later, in 1870, the right of citizenship was extended to individuals from African origin to be able to acquire the citizenship in the United States. Through history, we have many stages in the economic times of history in the United States. So in 1882, Congress enacted the Chinese Exclusion Act, which barred Chinese immigrants from entering the United States. The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 suspended Chinese immigration for 10 years and declared Chinese immigrants ineligible for naturalization. This case, or this law, went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court actually upheld this law, and the Chinese immigration was made permanently illegal. As you know, most of the Chinese immigration was in the West Coast, usually California, through the gold rush. A lot of Chinese immigrants would come and work in the gold mines. As you can see, there is always a reason for issuing or enacting a law, an economic pattern, an economic concern, an economic issue. Just to talk about specifically about the Chinese Exclusion Act, Chinese immigrants and their American-born families remain ineligible for citizenship until 1943, when another law, the Magnuson Act, was passed. And by then, you know, the U.S. was involved in World War II, and they were seeking to improve the morale on the home front. So that's when they changed this law. So this is related to the Chinese Exclusion Act. So then, the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed in 1882. So then what happened? Again, on 1891, there was another law, a new law, the Immigration Act of 1891, who then excludes and bars people who have, you know, bad moral character from entering to the country. And that's what I was telling you. We want people who have good moral. So now we are going to deter people who are polygamists, people convicted of, you know, certain crimes, and people who have certain disease. So we don't want them here. Then in 1992, Ellis Island is, you know, open and as a U.S. first immigration station in New York. The first immigrant process in Ellis Island is Annie Moore. Annie Moore was a teenager from the county of Cork in Ireland, and she was the first person who was processed as immigrant. And then after Annie Moore, more than 12 million immigrants will enter the country through Ellis Island between 1892 and 1954. So that was, you know, it was very important for the United States, this port. Probably many of your family members came through to Ellis Island. Then what happened, 1924 also is a key number, and it's a specific, a very important number, year for the United States. So in 1924, the Immigration Act of 1924 is enacted. This Immigration Act of 1924 establishes a new quota system. So the United States issue immigration visas to 2% of the total number of people of each nationality in the United States at the 1890 census. So what that means is that now we are going to establish quotas. So we are going to say who is allowed into the country. So we are going to say, you know, since we have, you know, immigrants from Northern Europe, so we are going to establish quotas so we can continue receiving immigrants from those countries. Unfortunately, in this case, the law, you know, the way that it was perceived was that the law favored immigration from Northern and Western European countries. Just three countries, Great Britain, Ireland, and Germany, accounted for 70% of all available visas. And it was said that the act almost completely excluded immigrants from Asia, aside from the Philippines, that it was in an American colony. So this quota system remained in effect through 1965, that we will talk about what happened in 1965, but through between 1924 through 1965, we had that, the United States used this quota system to regulate the immigration of the individuals into the United States. So then I wanted to pause a little bit, and I wanted to talk what happened in 1942. 1942 is the establishment of the Bracero program. The Bracero program is a program who allowed immigrants from Mexico, mostly, and Central America, to come to the United States to work here. So it was labor. So we now, because we are in the Second World War, we need workers to work in our fields, to work in farms. So what we do, the United States enacted this Bracero program, where they allowed thousands of Mexican immigrants to come to work in this program. So this Bracero program was in effect, and still in effect in a way. Well, the Bracero program itself was canceled, but now, you know, we have programs that we allow also to come laborers to the United States to work, to provide this type of work. But the Bracero program was specifically enacted to allow immigrants to come here to the United States to provide labor. And the Bracero program, Bracero comes from the word brazo, that in Spanish means arm. It's arm, so that's why it's called Bracero program. So something that I forget, and I'm sorry about that, but I wanted to talk that the Act of 1924, the quota, the new Immigration Act of 1924, also created the, it was a reason also to create the Border Patrol. So the Border Patrol that we know now, that is almost like a police, that patrols the border, so was created in 1924 as well. It was established as a federally armed force, specifically dedicated to policing the border. Initially, these officers did more policing of the prohibition era, like to prohibit the bootleggers to come to the United States, than provide actually or care for undocumented immigrants. But again, everything was shifted, and now the Border Patrol is our police force that enforces the immigration laws in our borders, so in Canada and Mexico. So now what happened, everything remained the same, as I said, to 1965. So in 1965, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Immigration and Nationality Act. This act disabled completely the quota system and said, well, we are not going to use the quota system anymore. And now we are going to favor the family reunification and skilled immigrants rather than country quotas. So now we are going to allow people who have some ties to the United States, so who are family members of U.S. American citizens, to come to this country. So they can be children of U.S. American citizens, spouses of American citizens, siblings of American citizens, parents of American citizens, or also family members of legal permanent residents as well. So this is one of the main priorities of this law. Then this law also says, well, now also we want to shift from the quota system, and we want to allow skilled laborers and professionals to come into the country so they can actually help to the world economy. And skilled laborers, similar to the Bracero program, so they can come here and work in our fields, because we need the labor. And also we need professionals, who have, the know-how, the skills, the professional skills to, to the donor economy or to help with our industries. And a new category that was also considered into this new law is refugees. So individuals who are fleeing their countries because persecution or some other reasons, also we are going to welcome them here in the United States. So this is a big change in the U.S. Immigration policy. And also, even though that the quota system was completely removed, this Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 also considered the lottery system. That we said, well, we are going to allow certain numbers of individuals that will come from certain countries that we don't have a lot of individuals from to come to this country, and we are going to do it through a lottery system. So pretty much like the way it sounds. So it's a lottery system where you pretty much will have a ticket if you are from certain countries. And every year we are going to give X amount of visas for the lottery system. And then if you are one of the lucky winners of a green card, we are going to allow you to come here and to immigrate to the United States. So this is the lottery system, the lottery program, which has been highly criticized because it allows people who have no ties whatsoever to the United States to immigrate to here through this program. Then moving forward, so as I said, the 1965 immigration law changed completely the way that we perceive immigration. Now, and then in 1986, President Reagan signed the Simpson-Mazzoli Act, which granted amnesty to more than 3 million immigrants living illegally or undocumented in the United States. So now we see a shift in these laws, and a shift in the laws and a shift in the policy to be more compassionate, to be more welcoming to refugees or to individuals who suffer in some way in the countries of origin, to allow them here to stay. And since then, after 1986, several laws have since then focused on refugees, including refugees from Asia, from Latin America, from the Caribbean. Specifically in 1990, Congress passed a law that gave temporary protective status to Central American individuals to shield them from deportation from countries facing natural disasters and armed conflict. So, that's when a lot of the individuals from Central America, El Salvador, Honduras, came to this country. And then, after 2001, after November 11, also we saw a shift in the laws. And now, there was a concern about terrorism and unauthorized immigration. And we were more protective about how we are going to respond, how we are going to screen individuals who come to this country. And we are also, prioritized on professionals and skilled laborers. So this was a very important shift. Then we have President Obama. President Obama, he came with a very compassionate approach to immigration. So he signed the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, which temporarily provided relief or some shield to individuals who came to the country when they were minors and they were brought here by their parents or came by themselves, but they arrived before they were minors. And we will talk a little bit more about Dreamers and DACA in a little bit. But the important issue here that you have to remember is that DACA doesn't provide a path for citizenship. So it provides you a relief, but it doesn't provide you a path of citizenship. So it doesn't give you a complete release. So if you're a DACA recipient, probably you will remain being a DACA recipient until we have a new law. So this DACA doesn't provide any relief. It doesn't give any status. So it just provides a shield to being deported. And we are going to talk a little bit more about this. So I want to pause a little bit, and I wanted to talk about about some legal terms used in immigration law. So I want to make to talk about the distinction between a citizen and a non-citizen, which is simple. So a citizen is a person has a passport, who has been granted the citizenship to the United States. A citizen, enjoys all the rights and obligations of any person who is born in the United States, and this citizenship can be acquired by naturalization or by birth. Then a non-citizen is a person who is here as an immigrant, who has no citizenship or who is through no lawful means. But meaning is a person who has not, who is not a person who doesn't have a document that allows him to doesn't have a, I'm sorry,
Everyone, please, what?
That's fine. So I want to talk about what is the difference between exclusion and deportation. So exclusion is precluding from, you know, precluding someone from entering the country. So meaning, if you are being excluded, is when you come here and you attempt to enter to the country, we are going to say, no, I'm sorry, but you are excluded. We are not going to allow you because you don't have a passport, because you don't meet the requirements, because you are not welcome here for, you know, any reason. You are being excluded. A deportation is different because a deportation is removing someone who was already present in the country, either by lawful or unlawful means. So that's a big difference. So exclusion is a person who is at the port of entry, a port of entry meaning, you know, in an airport or in a border, and is not allowed to enter into the country. A deportation is when someone is already in the country, has been already been living in the country or is visiting the country, and now it has to be removed. So we have to send the person back. And this happens, for example, when a person who came in a visa, you know, a student visa or a visitor's visa, and then the visa expired, then there has to be a process for you know, in the courts to deport this individual. And then if the court decides that this person has to be removed, then they will go through the deportation process. A person who has entered the United States without lawful means, and then they go again through the deportation process, so it can be deported, but it's for someone who is already in the country. So there has been always a question whether it is a right or a privilege to enter into the United States. And it is a right for the citizens to be in the United States. So if you were born here in the United States, you have the right to be here in this country. If you have acquired the citizenship through naturalization and you became and you become a citizen of the United States, you have the right to be here, to, the right to live in the United States. However, if you don't have, if you are not a citizen of the United States and you are just a visitor, you the law says, well, we are going to give you the privilege to live in the United States. And it is almost like, well, it is my house, so I will say, you know, if I invite you to my house, it is a privilege for you to come to my house and sit at my table. Because it is not your house. You don't own it. So it is very simple, and that's how, you know, that is the big difference. And now, what's a non-immigrant? What is an immigrant and a non-immigrant? An immigrant is a person who actually comes to the country to reside in the country and to live in the country. That is an immigrant. A non-immigrant is a person who is also a foreign-born individual, but who comes to the country not to stay, you know, in the long term. It's a person who is just going to be allowed to stay here for a certain period of time. So, you know, you can come here, you know, if you are going to Spain, you know, for vacation for 2 weeks, you are considered to be a non-immigrant because you are there with a visa that will allow you to stay for 2 weeks and visit the country. So you are not, you don't have any intent to live there. If you come here to the United States to, as I said, to work and to, you know, or you won the lottery, you know, for a green card, and you come here and you immigrate to the United States, you have all the intent to live in the United States. So you want to reside here. You are applying for a green card. A green card, for your information, is a legal permanent resident. And they call it a green card because they actually give you a green card. So it's a card, it's an ID that is green and white, and that's why it is commonly known as the green card. And this is, green card is given to legal permanent residents in the United States. So they are not citizens, but they have rights. They have certain rights, but they are allowed to stay here, and eventually a legal permanent resident will eventually be granted the privilege to apply for citizenship. So, immigration under the Obama administration. So, in 2014, the Obama administration issued a priority system for deporting unauthorized immigrants based on the security threat they pose to the United States. As you know, resources are very limited for the federal government, so it is very difficult to, you know, go and chase every single individual who has entered through unlawful means or who is not, who doesn't have a visa to be here in the United States or to live in the United States. So the Obama administration came up with this idea of saying, well, we are going to issue this priority system for deporting unauthorized immigrants based on the security threat. So meaning we are going to give points or, you know, priorities to different type of individuals. So, you know, since we don't have the resources, we are going to focus on the actual individuals who pose a threat to the United States. So we are going to, you know, give the highest priority to gang members, to felons, who individuals who, you know, have not followed the law, have committed crimes. We are going to focus on them, and we are going to try to go through the court system and, you know, enter into deportation proceedings and remove them from the country. And then, because our resources are very limited, we are going to place the lowest priority to individuals who have no criminal record and who have overstayed the non-immigrant visa. So, meaning, if we have an individual who came here as a visitor, you know, visitors are usually allowed to stay in the country for 6 months. And then if they overstay their visa, you know, they will be unlawfully here in the United States. But then if we have an individual, a family who came with a visitor's visa, they overstayed, now the visa expired 2 or 3 years ago, they don't pose a concern, they don't pose a threat to the United States, they work, they don't commit, you know, they have no criminal record. The Obama administration said, well, you know, that's fine. We are not going to pay attention to these individuals for now. We are going to allow them to remain here. We, you know, we are going to focus all our efforts and our financial resources to this highest priority. And as I said, the goal was, you know, the goal of the system was to concentrate the limited resources on serious cases. Under the Obama administration, yes.
Excuse me. I'm. There are a number of questions that are sort of piling up. So I don't know.
Perfect.
If you want
we can
to
go through them
now.
Sure, we can go through them now. That's fine.
Okay.
And I know. I apologize. I know that we are limited with the time, so. We can start with the questions.
Okay. I'm going to just pick, I don't know if you can see them. I'm going to pick Will's question at the first, which I don't know the answer to. Can states and cities have immigration policies different than federal law or policy?
Let me see here. Hold on 1 second, please.
So can states or cities make up their own?
States. Well, that's a very controversial topic. Definitely, we have seen also during the history of immigration that some states, they have tried to attempt to enforce their own laws and local laws. And we have had, you know, in Arizona, I think that probably you remember, in Hazleton, we had also here in Pennsylvania, a mayor that enacted a law that they said we are going to enforce immigration, and this has been, you know, in the courts, and at the end the answer has been, well, the federal government is the one who has actually the power to enforce immigration. It is one of the powers of the federal law. It is difficult to say now. We have, you know, we continue seeing in some ways local governments, you know, counties, states, that they have, you know, issued some type of immigration related regulations. So for example, we are not going to issue an ID or a driver's license card to a person who doesn't have a visa, or who doesn't have a permit, who doesn't have a legal permanent resident. We have seen that. But yeah, I think that there is no right answer to that. I think that, you know, the idea is that the federal government is the one who has to enforce immigration, and this has been, you know, and this is a controversial topic, and we will continue seeing the states, I think, trying to enforce immigration laws in the country. I hope that that's a response to your question. I know that it's not a great answer, but I think this is one of the issues with immigration.
Here's another question that goes back a long time. This is Doug Mitchell's question. Has birth conveyed citizenship since 1790? Has it always conveyed citizenship?
Well, I don't have that specific, and I apologize for that. The idea was that if you were born, you know, in 1790, if you were born here in the United States and you were a free white person, you were granted the citizenship. Then in 1870, this right of citizenship was extended to those of African origin. So after that, every person who was born in the United States, yes, they were acquired. But, you know, before, you know, with the law of 1790, even Native Americans who had been, you know, in the country for a long time before 1790, were not given the opportunity to become citizens because they were not a free white person.
Yeah, right. There's one more question. I think this will be as much as we are able to do today. Sarah is asking, I would like to know more about how things have changed under the Trump administration as opposed to the prioritization you described under Obama. You could
keep and I think that this is going to be one of the topics for the next session, right?
Okay, that's fair.
Yes, but you know, in general, you know, as you can see, just as a brief, you know, entrance to this topic, this is also, I think, is what to talk about, like, you know, for a full session about these changes. But in general, the new administration, you know, has a different type of approach, a different policy. And now it's like we are going to enforce our immigration policies to the fullest. We are going to, you know, we are going to get rid of the of this new system, of the old system of President Obama. We are going to, you know, there is no priority. So now everyone who is, you know, is undocumented or unlawfully in the United States is going to be, you know, could face deportation. And I think that's, in just a few words, that's the change. It's like there is no priority. What we have seen in the courts, and, you know, at least in my experience, I practiced immigration law for a few years. I think up to 3 years ago, I practiced immigration law at the beginning of the administration. And what I saw, it was, yeah, even though that was the policy that, you know, all of the unlawful immigrants will be, you know, potentially could face deportation, the law didn't have the administration didn't have the financial resources. So again, it is very difficult, you know. We have a very large country, 300 million individuals, so it is very difficult. So they continue focusing a little bit on the, you know, high priority, in a way that they, even though they didn't have a priority system anymore, they continue focusing on the individuals who had some type of record, they were felons and all of that.
Okay, well, thank you. I think we might end up working on that question, as you mentioned, next week. So we thank you. We need to let people go so they can go to virtual church. well, normally yeah. we would just walk down the hall, but we walk into the other room and put on the TV. So thanks to everybody that came. I hope you'll come back next week, and we'll have a look at the present day. Thank you. And Christian, thank you very much. This was very informative, and now I need to study. So thank you, and we'll see you all next week then.